Welcome back to the Geekcentric Podcast, and welcome back to our watch club for Star Wars The Bad Batch Season 3. We were prawns in the same war, and we all lost.
Did you just say prawns?
You said prawns.
Yeah, you said prawns.
I did.
You were the shrimp. We were the shrimp in the Empire's
War. Damn! Otherwise, it was pretty good. Okay.
I loved watching the three of us go.
Who is that supposed to be? Crosshair?
No,
it's Asajj Ventress.
Yeah. Well, who else wants to do it? Anyone else wants to do that line?
We were all pawn. I can't do it.
That's pretty good. That was getting actually, there.
Yeah.
That was getting there.
Okay. Welcome back to Watch Club. My name is CTO831, but you can call me Hugs. And this is our Watch Club for Star Wars The Bad Batch, Season 3, Episode 9. If you're joining us for the first time, this is Watch Club, our weekly review series. It's kind of like a book club, but it is way better. Keep in mind, we will be going into full spoilers for this series and Star Wars in general, so if you haven't watched this week's episode yet, be sure to do so, and then come right back in less than 12 parsecs. Now, before we almost get eaten by a tentacled leviathan with bioluminescent carapace, let me introduce you to our experimental crew of ragtag troopers. First up, he's finally back from the dead to teach us some lessons. He's taller than a Jawa, smaller than Jabba, and just as entertaining as Jar Jar. He's CT1231, also known as Edit.
What's up, my prawns? How you doing?
What's up? Well, now I have to keep that version. Yeah. Maybe I'll put both. Maybe, I don't know. We'll see. Right behind him in the lineup, we are Sar Glad to have a true friend and war hero joining us yet again, and her name is CT0118, but you can call her Brushstroke.
I'm always here.
You're always here. You're always always ready to save the day, to go save That's right. someone else, to trust someone too much.
Yep.
But listen, get hype right now, everyone. Get hype. We found him after falling through the sky for the last few weeks. He's dropping down from way up high. He's the dopest, dankest dude on Dagobah. Let's give a huge ahoy hoy for CT1006, but you can call him Joints.
Ahoy hoy.
Hey! Yeah. We haven't had that in so long.
I've been stuck on Batuu. It took me a bit longer to get back from Batuu than you guys. So
that must have been it.
That was it. It was just different flight. It took a bit longer.
Something to do with your toes being frozen or something like that, I think, at one point.
Yeah.
I don't know, it was
a journey to get here. Let's just say that.
It was a journey. I'm so happy to have our full batch here.
Let me tell you, the batches unite.
Edit Joints back with us again. I think we missed you almost as much as Omega misses anyone. But how have you two been? How have you been enjoying this season? Joints, let's start with you.
Oh, I've been good. Just been very busy since getting back from that extended stay in Batuu. So just trying to catch up on everything else before I could, talk about the things we love. But this season has been phenomenal. I've been missing the weekly conversations we used to have about it. So I can't wait to get back into it because, again, this reintroduction to a character I thought was dead, considering some of the other lore. But man, this is such a good season so far.
Mm-hmm.
Dope.
Yeah, I think I had much of the same sentiments even on our spoiler-free review, where it was, the first 8 episodes really do deliver on a balance between story and, adventure of the week. I think episode 8 is obviously the most filler episode. It does give us a great cameo appearance with Fennec Shand, but for the most part, that one felt like it was just very filler. But everything leading up to it, to episode 8 has been a really great balance. The episode where they return to that snowy planet where Crosshair kind of had his epiphany and his realization of what loyalty really looks like, to have that moment to be reliving that moment with the rest of the batches, and for him to have this sort of reconciliation with Hunter in the process, it really does go to show how the team behind this series, they are really trying to consciously wrap up these characters in ways and bring things together, and I think that attention to that detail, I appreciate it. I think it's great. It's been 2 seasons of trying to figuring out how to do the ballet of storytelling, and I think season three is very strong. It's very strong.
They're nailing it. They're nailing it for sure. Cool. Well, listen, we've got a lot to talk about. So before we slip on a rock, let's get into this week's episode. On a foggy day on Pabu, or Pabu, how would you say it? I've heard a YouTuber once call it Pabu, like Abu.
I think it's
I
up
think
for
the
interpretation.
A's the harder one. Pabu.
Pabu.
Okay, yeah. Let's go with Pabu. Yeah.
I think that's how they say it.
Okay. On Pabu. A foggy day on Pabu, Wrecker assists locals while dealing with a grumpy crosshair. They're joined by Hunter, who reminds everyone of their mission, awaiting Fennec Shand's return to learn about Omega's significance. With no word back from Fennec, Crosshair starts to question if it's even important. Meanwhile, Omega enjoys the beach with Batcha until they stumble upon a cavern. Batcha expresses unease about its contents, prompting Omega to investigate, despite Batcha's reluctance to proceed, leaving her at the entrance. Inside the cavern, Omega discovers a ship with one last warning. Batcha barks and then runs away, and out of the darkness appears Asajj Ventress. Which, by the way, if you're listening, I was trying to do Asajj Ventress for the intro, and apparently it was more Crosshair.
That's how we got prawns. Yeah.
We got prawns. I was too focused on the actual voice to read. continuing, Hunter, Crosshair, and Wrecker find Batcha panicking on the beach, and she leads them back to the cavern where they encounter Ventress, who claims she was sent by Fennec. Jeez. Who claimed she was sent
Friendic.
By Fennec.
Sent by Friendic. I was just, it's good because they're friends. I think it makes total sense.
Who claims she was sent by Fennec. She asks why they want to know about M-Count. And after some not great attempts from Omega at lying, Ventress explains the concept of midichlorians, which causes an overtly excited or an overly excited Omega to show their hand. Ventress explains that training would be required to determine the young clone's M count, and as she attempts to leave, Omega insists on being tested by Ventress to determine her identity. So let's get right into this. You know, why do you think, what do you think of how Ventress was revealed, and why do you think Omega was excited about possibly being a Jedi?
Well, I'm wondering too if it wasn't necessarily to, you said there, to figure out her identity in the process. I think it's just to figure out if she's actually force sensitive, if she actually can wield the force, because we've all talked about it throughout the other two seasons that there's been hints of some sort of force sensitivity in her, and I love that Asajj kind of clarifies, like, there's people that can be force sensitive but not Jedis, because they haven't trained in the way of the Force, right? Mm-hmm. So that might be very much the situation we're looking at with Omega, where she has an M count. I think the identity of how that M count comes to be is still to be figured out. It's more or less right now figuring out, can Omega wield the Force? Can she actually be a Force user and be trained in the ways of a Jedi to inevitably be that? And I think she likes that idea. You can see that it looks, she, you know, she's kind of like, oh, I could be, you know, there's something special about me, something more, something that I think in a lot of ways she realizes she can use to help others. And I think that's kind of why she's excited about it. She knows I'm sure she's aware of the myths and of the Jedi, right? Because this is post.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, exactly. So it's definitely inspiring her in this moment.
Yeah, especially because you think the clones, before they were, you know, killing the Jedi, they were made to serve and work with them in the army and stuff like that. So, like, the dream of a clone was to work with a strong Jedi, and the fact that she could now be the strong Jedi for the Bad Batch to work with probably is kind of a little, almost like, dream come true for her. Mm-hmm. In terms of Asajj's return, though, this is something I was not expecting it to be this, like, almost nonchalant, where it's like, oh, she's just there already, by the way. And again, where she left off in the Dark Disciple book, like, she was thought to be dead. Like, Obi-Wan and Quinlan Voss returned her body to Dathomir, and she was welcomed by her sisters. So it's like, I need to know how. That is the biggest thing that comes from her return, is how did she survive? Because she was left for dead so many times. That final one seemed like it really was the nail in the coffin. But to see that she got out, I'm only, more questions are coming to mind. Like, how did she do it this time?
Yeah, I think we, you know, and Megan, you and I were kind of speculating last week about, you know, the concepts around Project Necromancer, what that looks like. You know, we had the Ahsoka show that has shown us, and of course Clone Wars more than once, shown us characters being brought back from the dead, especially with the Night Sister magic, you know, that she comes from. So I think there could be something in and around that. I don't know. I'm not sure if we'll ever really get that answer. You know, I think that's one of the things that I both love and sometimes fight with a little bit in Star Wars, where it's like, we're not going to give you all the answers because there's going to be a comic book or an episode of Tales of the Jedi or something to give you that answer in the future. Mm-hmm. And so, you know what, again, part of me, the greedy part of me is like, I want the answers right now. I've been waiting so long. But at the same time, I'm like, we'll get it eventually, and I'm sure it'll be great.
And is it essential to this story? Right? Like, is why she, how she survived essential? Is it something, like you said, that couldn't be explored in a graphic novel, comic, or an episode of Tales of the Jedi? I think that would be really cool. You kind of see the interstitial moments for like maybe one or two of the episodes, and then you get that post, like, where she, you know, after she was assumed dead, as Darcy was describing. I think that's cool. I know we all kind of were thinking that she was going to be coming back as a clone, so this is obviously maybe a bit of an indication that that's not the case. But, you know, you bring up the Night Sisters, like, Darcy, I would probably ask you this question because you might be more aware of the timeline. Are there any active Night Sisters?
No, so this is already after Grievous massacred the planet and killed all the Night Sisters. Like, when she's returned to the planet, like, before that in Dark Disciple, she takes Quinlan there to experience the loss and pain and suffering to kind of open him up to the dark side, basically, and that's what begins his descent. Is he's psychometric as well, and he touches one of the things and sees firsthand the devastation, how there were no survivors left after Grievous, again, ran through the planet and just killed everything he could see. So again, this is like the whole Night Sister magic coming into play. Is if there's another one out there, then we haven't seen her yet, basically, because at this point they're all dead. Like, anyone who was on the planet at the time of the massacre did not get out. So it's, again, that's where the questions come from. But you're right, it doesn't matter to this story, and I really enjoy how they've brought her in to be this almost master-like figure for Omega, at least in this episode. It was really enjoyable.
At least in this episode, for sure. She's definitely coming off with some great Jedi vibes and a little, you know, jaded, if you will, by the past events. And I don't know, she's looking and sounding a lot like Crosshair. I'm getting ready to ship those two.
That was just my impression, Justin. I think it's also really poetic. It, you know, just exactly like visually how Ventress is brought in. Like, she's literally walking out of the shadows of the darkness into the light. And not only that, it's not natural light. It's light that Omega is shining on her, which also speaks to the character of Omega and what she tends to do whenever she's around, you know, people. She can bring out the best in people. And I think that's awesome. I think, you know, Ventress is not instantly good. She still grabs Omega by the arm, but, you know, she does it until she understands what she's dealing with. She looks incredible. The hairdo looks awesome. And I love that she's the one brought into this episode to train Omega specifically, because, you know, I think between Ahsoka and or the upcoming Acolyte series, like, I just love that Star Wars is exploring the gray side of the Force, like we've been talking about, and focusing less on good and evil and more of a balance of exploring the Force for what it is. And Ventress is just the perfect person to do that. And I think this series has such a great focus on outcasts and second chances, and Ventress fits that like a glove. Like, she's the perfect force sensitive character that I think the other nice thing is she's not going to force Omega to continue her training, right? She, you know, I think if it was a Jedi or if it was somebody more maybe closer to the light side of the Force, they would just be like, well, we have a civil duty to train this youngling. Like, she has to, you know, here, you know, Ventress is maybe a little bit more willing to just sort of test and then move on.
She's not training her. She's just she's just helping to validate what they're asking, right?
Right.
You know, they're telling her, well, they say she has something with like M counts in her blood. And then she's like, well, yo, M counts are like the Jedi stuff that, you know, make Jedis, right? And then she's like, well, let me test this and we'll get some definitive answers. And then she's like,
I'm glad she actually said midichlorians, by the way.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah.
You finally got the confirmation that that is what they mean.
Well, I was actually hoping they would. I was hoping they would.
Yeah, I was
go
just
with
M
it.
Count.
I was just
you keep with the M count. That's been enough.
Let's let's get away from
team
all that.
Team M count, team midi chlorian, you know, Star Wars fans.
Yeah, tomato, tomato, whatever. But I think at the end of the day, like, you're right, Nate. Like, she's the perfect character that fits into this mold, this story as having a bit of a redemption, having a second chance, and making that second chance matter and be different from before. So I don't think we're done with seeing her, obviously. I think that this is just an introduction, and I think she's going to be more intrigued about, because I'm pretty sure they said the Empire is interested in Omega because of her M count. So if that's the case, then that just gives Asajj enough information to know, well, the Emperor's up to the Empire's up to something. I'm going to find out what that is. So I think she's going to run surveillance, and she's going to do her own thing behind the scenes, and maybe we find, you know, she crosses paths with them again towards the end of this season. But yeah, I think right now it was more just setting out feelers to see if, like, can she actually wield the Force.
I also want to shout out the visual language of the opening shot in this episode as well before we move on. Like, it's a foggy day on Pabu. Like, it's the grayest we've ever seen it. And it's like, it couldn't be more on the nose of, like, this is for the grayness. But at the same time, like, I just think this team is so smart, the way that they find these little ways to set tone for the episode and its overall messages. And I just, fantastic stuff. And also, poor little Omega cannot lie to save her life. Like,
she's horrible.
Terrible liar. So, like, at least we know, like, you know, she won't. Maybe she won't be using the Jedi mind trick anytime soon. Like, maybe that's going to be a struggle for her. But I don't know. Anything else before we keep going?
No, I mean, I'm realizing I haven't really said that much. But I think I just follow along with everything you guys said. I'm just stoked. I mean, we know me. Anytime a Clone Wars character pops up in any other show, I'm jazzed. So this is fantastic and probably might be my favorite episode of the whole show. So.
Whoa. Wow.
Thus far.
Okay, well.
Wow.
We still have.
We already know your score.
Thus far. We haven't seen it end yet, but. Yeah.
All right, well, let's keep going here. Ventress agrees to help Omega discover her identity, opting for unconventional methods over Omega's scientific approach. As Omega undergoes a test balancing on a slippery rock, the brothers cheer her on enthusiastically. Omega queries Ventress about her Jedi status, receiving a dry denial as Ventress says she's not a Jedi but knows some of their ways. Meanwhile, Crosshair's arrival raises suspicion as he identifies Ventress as a separatist assassin from Tech's files, leading to apprehension about her motives. For Omega's next trial, she must retrieve a white blossom off a weeping Maya tree from the highest point on Pabu before sunset. As Omega rushes off to complete the task, she enlists Batcher's help along the way. Ventress warns the clones against aggression, prompting a confrontation where she displays her Force abilities by disarming them. Despite initial hostility, Ventress swiftly overpowers the clones in a physical altercation, resulting in Omega arriving back to see Ventress Force-choking Wrecker, Crosshair on the ground, and Hunter held at the end of her saber. Times have changed, and Ventress explains she's many things, but she's not their enemy, and that the Empire is more dangerous than they could possibly fathom. So, Megan, let's start with you here. What did you think of Ventress's unconventional training and her skills in combat against Hunter, Wrecker, and Crosshair?
The funny thing is, it's not that unconventional. She's doing exactly what a Jedi Master would do to test a youngling, like the balancing thing, and then later on we get a reach out.
Yeah.
And she's like, what am I reaching for? Like, we've seen that moment so many times in Star Wars. So it's kind of fun to have that, like, reflected in this episode with two characters that, like, you never thought would be a part of something like that. This moment is why this episode is my favorite of the show. The fight sequence Asajj and the guys is second to Ahsoka and Maul in Clone Wars Season 7. It was so quick, so clean, and the animation is incredible in that scene. But it just reminds me why I love fight sequences in Star Wars. And I kid you not, I jumped up and screamed when the yellow lightsaber came out. Like, that was a dope moment. And Ventress always has been that really intense, clean fighter.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fun to see her do that in a episode where it kind of felt like maybe she wouldn't be that so much. She was just kind of here to test Omega, but I'm glad we got that badass Ventress.
And damn, is she quick, right? Like, ooh. I think between this and that Acolyte trailer, like, I'm just loving the martial arts hand-to-hand representation that we've been seeing lately in Star Wars. And I love it when she's, like, hitting the pressure points on Wrecker, or she does that elbow dive move, and, like, her scream when she does the force push is fantastic.
Oh, my God, it's amazing. And I will also say, not only on Ventress's side, but to watch three out of the four batches that we're used to being the bad batches, to watch them fight again and to watch Crosshair get like jacked up and do well was a really cool thing. They didn't focus on Crosshair's hand because he was fine.
Yeah, they looked like a team again, right? Like,
yeah, they looked it was like so fun.
Yeah, it was great. I think the animated choreography is, again, top notch. It's very much a reflection of how far they've come with animation and the ability to do justice to these fight scenes, to make you kind of like in awe at moments when they're, you know, grappling with one another and you know, the kicks and the flips and stuff like that. It was all well choreographed and well animated. And yeah, I think what was the takeaway for me was, you know, obviously Asajj being back and fighting, that's great, but to see the batches together, you know, back, you know, defending each other and kind of like doing their own choreography of how to attack and stuff like that. Like you saw it, like it just melded right back to like normal for them. So that was really cool. It was definitely one of the highlights of the episode for sure. And then also just to have that unraveling of trust, you know, loyalty, understanding that, right? Like, you know, she's basically saying, you know, how many people, not in so many words obviously, but she's gently implying, I feel like, you know, how many people trusted you guys? All I'm asking is, you know, understand that I too am someone that you might not think to be your, you know, I'm not your enemy, right? So I think that's really nice, and it sets up this idea of the batches kind of having to extend a little bit more and, you know, maybe open their eyes a little bit.
I mean, I just love the training. Again, I'm going to keep talking about Dark Disciple, because that's, in my opinion, the last time we saw Ventress. And just the way she trains Quinlan in, like, introducing him to the dark side was very reminiscent of how she was going about training Omega here. And it is, again, like you said, very natural. That's what Jedi and Sith do. It's all about connecting to the Force in your own way, whether it's through pain or just reaching out. And just, again, the way that her story ends in that book is her feeling the living Force coming through her again and introducing her to the light side for the first time in who knows how long. So seeing, again, the lighter spin on that training we saw in the book was cool. It really, again, shows where she is now, where she is trying to do better while she is also still just looking out for herself, as shown in that fight scene where she, like, no holds barred. She was ready to do what needed to be done to make sure she got out of there okay. So it was wicked to see her, again, back in top form.
Well, and I love that that again, it shows the attention to details that these writers have, in the sense that the second test that she does, when she asks Omega to get from the highest point of Pabu, get a lotus leaf or whatever it was, and a Maya tree blossom leaf rather, and to do that, and I love that it was more of a, it just is consistent with the way that the Force is taught, right? If we look at Yoda teaching Luke on Dagobah and asking him to do a near impossible task for him, to lift the X-Wing out of the water, the test is not to actually lift the X-Wing out of the water. The test is to see how willing Luke is to do that. So to see the same thing from a character like Ventress, it's just really cool, because, like, her, you would think that, like, to your point, Darcy, that she would sort of have such a different way about, you know, kind of testing someone to tap into the Force, and here she's able to kind of, they keep it consistent, and she, you know, Omega kind of says, well, that's impossible, and she just looks at her all like angry like, and then Omega's like, okay, yeah, I can do this. And I think that's really, really cool, and I think that just shows that, you know, Omega isn't maybe where Luke was at that point in his journey with the Force. But at least she is like, you know, she after at least one angry scowling glance, she's willing to jump in. Cool. Let's keep going on here. So the Batch convenes on their ship to discuss the Ventress situation, with Omega advocating trust, obviously, while her brothers remain skeptical of her capacity, of Ventress's capacity for change. Omega confronts Crosshair, saying that she never gave up on him, and expresses her willingness to give Ventress a chance. The following day, Omega, accompanied by Batcher, finds Ventress near the water, sensing a potential connection between Ventress and the Batch. As part of Omega's third test, they venture into the ocean on a boat while the Batch brothers observe from afar. And I love that moment when Wrecker's just like, oh, how does she know we're looking at her? It's like, come on. Omega grows frustrated when nothing happens during the test, but Ventress explains that even if she has Force potential, her brothers can't show her how to tap into it. Then, demonstrating her abilities, Ventress summons a school of fish, inadvertently attracting a Varathion. As the two are thrown overboard, Ventress rescues Omega under the water, and the Batch attempts to intervene by firing on the creature, worsening the situation. Omega urges them to stop, trusting Ventress to handle the creature, which she does, using the Force to calm it before reuniting with Omega and departing with the Batch. So, Megan, let's start with you again. What did you think of Omega's unrelenting willingness to trust Ventress and the attack on the boat? And are you happy that Omega didn't use the Force? I've seen some people online that are like, I'm really happy she didn't use the Force. What do you think?
Well, I think that probably all comes from the fact that Sabine did in Ahsoka, and that was kind of like unnecessary. So maybe people are just happy that not everybody's going to be a Jedi.
Right.
But I think, like, classic Omega, first of all, with trusting Ventress. Sorry, my brain just stopped working for a second. classic Omega, trusting Ventress, no problem. Of course she would. There's a moment when Crosshair says, like, you're being naive. And she goes, I never gave up on you, bitch. Of course.
Yeah. Like,
Batch.
I never gave up. Batch.
Yeah.
That's
awesome.
Like,
she did do a double snap.
She did.
Yeah. I loved his delivery, though. You're being naive. Like,
yeah.
Like, it just brings you back to the whole jail cell scene, right? When he was.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
But she never gave up on him. Like, aren't you grateful for that, Crosshair? Because he wouldn't be here.
He didn't say anything after, so I think he recognizes.
No, and you could see in his face.
Yeah, exactly.
His reaction said it all. But this is why I love Omega so much, because she knows who to trust.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she is very trusting, but I think emotional connection maybe is her, like, Force.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I was talking about. That. Yeah.
Yeah,
we have talked about that.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. She's been showing her Force capabilities through her relationships and her ability to read situations, right? In the way she's able to evaluate, you know, even in episode, I think it was 4, when they were on the planet and they were doing the hustling. And, you know, and then she's like, no, just like, let's go. And then inevitably she gave in, but she knew, she was like, okay, we're not getting out of this situation unless Crosshair just loses his shit. So let's just go with it. Let's do it your way. But I think you're right. I think she's been showing these signs throughout the season that she's Force sensitive in other ways. Sure. She can't, you know, lift a rock or, you know, reach out and touch the Force and connect with it. But there's something that's there and that's very elusive, if you will, and her the way she approaches using the Force.
Well, but also this is her first encounter with someone who knows how to use the Force.
Yeah, that's true.
So
absolutely.
Like, of course she's not gonna get it on the first try.
Yeah.
I think that is more accurate than any other representation of somebody who is Force sensitive. Like, the fact that Rey caught on to it so quickly, obviously she's a different situation. But, like, there's so many characters that are introduced as, like, this person's Force sensitive, but they've never been in contact with the Jedi before. And all of a sudden, they just, like, know how to use it. It's it's more accurate the way that
absolutely
Omega's journey is going. Yeah. And she was trained by clones, so she is a soldier first. That's where her brain goes. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think the emotional thing is what her sensitivity is.
Mm-hmm. I just like that idea because it's kind of, again, reinforcing this fact that you can be force sensitive without being a Jedi. Like, yes. I mean, there's it is theorized that Han Solo's like piloting capabilities comes from the fact that he is force sensitive in that regard, but that's kind of the only
same
way you can
Paul.
Tap in. And
yeah.
It's yeah, exactly. Same with Poe. And that, like, they've even gone further to say Poe's is from the fact that he grew up next to one of the three trees connected yeah. to the Force.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh,
so, like,
cool.
It's neat how, again, they're trying to really drive home the fact that the Force could be used in different ways, and what one way makes you a Jedi, where you can really physically use it to influence the world, where other ways are more inherently, like, intrinsically to themselves and will help them get out of situations that are, you know, difficult, because whether it's piloting or it's navigating these tricky, you know, relationship matters, where who can I trust to get me out of the situation. So it's mm-hmm. it's really cool to see, again, more aspects of the Force. And I don't like, just because it's kind of proven that she isn't a Jedi doesn't mean she isn't force sensitive, which is a really neat
exactly.
idea.
Yeah, and that's the interesting part, because, you know, you don't need to be a Jedi. Sorry, you don't need to be deemed force sensitive to be a Jedi. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can mm-hmm. be force sensitive and not be a Jedi. And I think it's the difference between believing and practicing, right? Like I think a Jedi very much falls in the practice what they preach sort of mentality. They mm-hmm. practice what they believe in, and then the other side of it is just have an understanding of it. You know, I think you could kind of relate it to like religion. Like, some people are, they practice their religion very you know, with high attention and you know, all the attention to detail, if you will, and then others might just believe in God rather than just actually practice their religion, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think it's sort of the same thing when you think of the Force. It's like, you know, maybe everyone can sort of has the ability to touch that, to use that, but it's in them to have to believe to actually do it. Do you know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. essentially everyone's connected to the Force.
Yeah, the Force is in everyone and
exactly.
everything.
Exactly.
Like,
so
the Force is what
it's just a matter
the
of, you know, who and if you're, you know, come from obviously a bloodline like the Skywalkers or the Palpatines or something, you're gonna have some sort of extreme sensitivity to it.
The Palpatines.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know,
previously on the Palpatines.
Yeah, I want a 70s sitcom called the Palpatines.
That
Don't
would be the
you
best.
Bet.
Do it. I also love the idea that, like, there's just, like, some families on Jedha that, like, they hand out the Journal of the Wills, like, door to door. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, have you heard the good word?
Yeah, yeah. Have you heard the good word?
but I want to just kind of talk about that Force ability to commune with another living being through the Force. I believe, if you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's more of a light side ability, right? We've seen it with Rey and that snake in Episode 9. We see it in the Book of Boba Fett when Grogu calms the Rancor. And Ahsoka, right, with Ahsoka and the Purgle. So to see it here with Ventress is fantastic, because Omega's, like you called it out earlier, Omega's first experience is, this is her seeing the Force for the first time, and the first thing she sees is Wrecker being choked out. So she gets
yep.
to see the dark side of the Force, but then almost immediately after, she gets to see this calming moment with the Verathian. And I think, again, that's just why Ventress is such a perfect choice here, because, again, mm-hmm. she's able to sort of show her, like, listen, you know, your empathetic ways fit so well into this category of Force user. And it's just, it again, if you saw Ventress at the beginning of her journey, mm-hmm. you would have never, ever imagined that we'd be saying that she's the perfect person to be with Omega in this mm-hmm. moment. So,
yeah, you'd be thinking she's double-crossing them somehow.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of double-crossing, double crosshair, I don't know how I was going to go with that. I just wanted to talk about, because I almost choked up from a very simple moment, and that's seeing Crosshair extend his hand out to Ventress when they're getting up on the ship. It's beautiful. It's him saying, I see you, I understand, right? And especially having that moment of, you know, you better check yourself, batch from Omega earlier, seeing him here, you know, they didn't really linger on it too long. I think they could have lingered on it longer, but it still got me. And I fully expected that moment for him to just wave her away, and he doesn't. He just silently puts his hand out, and it was just so lovely.
I had a little like, ooh.
Yeah,
I'd ship these two.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree.
Like, what about the woman on the boat?
Perfect couple.
The fisher lady. Come on.
What do you mean?
No, yeah, I know. Asaj, no,
again,
there was no chemistry.
Asaj met her one true love. I don't,
yes, I know she did.
Yeah,
but like, doesn't mean, you know, he's gone.
They,
so. Yeah.
they might have an open relationship. Those two, you never know.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah,
they might be down for that sort of thing.
Yeah. So at the end of this episode, does she get on the ship and leave with the batches, Asaj?
Well, why don't I get to that? Later, at Ventress's ship, yeah. Ventress tells them that she doesn't think that Omega has a high M count. So that might not be why the Empire is after her. For right now, they still don't have an answer, and Omega leaves with Wrecker. But once she's left with the other two clones, Crosshair calls out Ventress for lying to Omega. Ventress tells them to leave Pabu and that they're not safe there. And with that, Ventress, on her own, gets on her ship and heads off planet, bringing the episode to an end. Before we get to what's going to happen, Batch, Justin, was there something you wanted to say before I rudely interrupted you?
No, not at all. I think this was a nice little side adventure, right? With Asaj and getting reintroduced to this character and seeing a whole other side to her. So I'm glad that it's not like she's tagging along for the next set of adventures. She was here for a purpose to help identify, not train, but just help identify if Omega is force sensitive, right? Mm-hmm. And that's it. That was essentially it. It was nothing beyond that. It wasn't who is she, where is she from sort of thing, you know, trying to get into her mind. It was just, can she actually wield the force? And she probably, I think to the audience, people have recognized those signs for a long time that she is probably a force user. But in this example of these tests, it's clear that she's not a Jedi force user, right? She has the ways with the force in a different way. So I'm really happy that Asaj was able to come in here, show us the other side of a character that we know and love, and to kind of leave it at a place where it's like, when will we see her again? And, you know, I think Jennifer Corbett has actually said, like, there's more to explore in future stories. Now, we know this is the final season. What does she mean by future stories? So that could have been a slip up, or maybe that's, you know, something to anticipate, as you said. So
it's the end of the Bad Batch. Yep. It's not the end of animated Star Wars.
Exactly,
stories.
For sure.
I'm surprised
right.
that if we get an announcement next year, a celebration, that the follow-up to
we
Bad
can get
Batch
one sooner.
Will be... potentially maybe even at D23 we'll see, I don't know. Like, but yeah, it was a really cool way to, place to leave her off. I agree, where she served a purpose in this episode, and she's not joining the crew. She did her thing and now she's off going to do her own thing again, and maybe we'll see her again, and I love that idea.
Yeah
One of the things I love, and this is what I was going to say before, one of the things I love about a lot of the newer Star Wars stuff right now is that it's very gray focused.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I love about Asaj, like we were talking before, is she truly lies in the middle, same as Ahsoka, same as like the darker Jedis from the Ahsoka series. It's all just very much showing that everybody has a little bit of dark and light inside of them.
Yeah.
And it's so fun to explore that because it's so much deeper and interesting.
It shows that both, you know, light and dark have their issues, right?
And their merit, too.
And their merit,
yeah,
absolutely.
There's a place for both.
There's absolutely. But I think the gray are really presenting themselves as melding what they want from each side.
Yeah, that balance.
Yes.
They are embodying the balance that is the force.
Yeah.
And I think it would be interesting in future stories to get to explore more of the gray side of the force, and to see the wins, you know, like we kind of already have, and also to see the failures, I think would be really intriguing as well.
Yeah, I wonder though if by doing that you kind of like, what's nice is that because we have such a predominant perspective on dark and light, that's why gray feels so refreshingly different, because we know those polar opposites. And for us as fans of these stories, and to see gray Jedis and their varying degrees, maybe they're more dark than they are light, maybe they're more light than they are dark, you know, maybe they're morally, you know, challenged, if you will. Like they have different sense of beliefs. I think some have even said maybe Qui-Gon is more of a gray Jedi than he was, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Than he was an actual Jedi, right? So it's like to understand the gray is sort of a line, as we said, like in between, rather than giving the focus on like their wins and fails. I think they are sort of the best example of wins and fails, like in themselves as being gray.
All right. Well, listen, let's, you batches, we went off on a tangent there and I love it. That's what happens when you get us all in a room. But I I wanted to circle back to what's going to happen, batch, our prediction segment for what's coming up in the future of this series. This was the first episode as press that we got to watch along with everyone else. And that was fantastic. So we truly do not know what's going to happen next, but we can definitely have some fun speculating. Circling back to the name of this episode, The Harbinger, you know, what do we think, and Darcy, I want to start with you, what do you think Ventress was the harbinger of? What does her warning mean for the batch? And, you know, do you, like Justin, believe that we will see her again before the end of the series?
Well, yeah, for sure. We will definitely see her again. Again, whether it's before the end of the series is where I kind of waver. I do like the idea that now that she's on to the idea of the Empire being this bigger threat, that she's going to do her own investigating, and maybe that leads her to cross paths again with the Batch. I'd love that. But I'd also be happy if we don't see her at all for this series, and then we pick up her story later on, and she's exploring a different avenue of Project Necromancer, because we know that by the time of The Mandalorian, it's still a thing that's going on. So clearly, whatever happens to the Batch, they don't wrap it up all neatly, because they're still going to, the Empire is still going to find a way. So it'd be cool if she kind of fills in that void of exploring how they got from the Batch to Mandalorian. As opposed to, in regards to the first part there, what was the first part of the prediction you asked?
What was she the harbinger of, or what does her warning mean for the Batch?
Yes. Again, the fact that the way she appeared on the thing, already knowing where Omega and the Batches are, I think it is just the idea is like, you're not safe here. They're coming for you. The Empire is next. Like, I found you. Next is going to be all those shock troopers and stuff like that coming down and really just destroying everything she likes, basically. And it's, I think that's why it was like, you need to leave, because if you want to see this place remain as peaceful as it is, you can't be here, type thing, because she is such a target for the Empire. So again, I wouldn't be surprised if in the next episode or two we see this almost attack on Pabu start, or almost them seeing the idea that that may happen, and that's why they leave to go on, you know, to really take it to the what's his name? Why can't I remember the guy, necromancer science guy?
Hemlock.
Yeah, so they can take the fight to Hemlock on whatever that planet is called.
Tantus. Again.
Tantus. I almost said Mantis.
Listen,
like, that's not right.
You've been up in that sky for so long.
Oh, yeah.
Your brain.
The air's really
thin
up there. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm still loopy from that. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it'd be cool if again, the fear of their home being threatened is what leads them to take the fight to Hemlock and finally, you know, kind of seal the deal, or at least attempt to.
Mm. Well, yeah, I think you're right on that. I think, you know, she is a harbinger because she's bringing, you know, a message of, you know, you're not safe, right? Mm-hmm. If I could find you this easily and, you know, hide in the shadows, and, you know, then who what's to say that Hemlock can do the same, right? And I think you're right. I think it's a foreshadow of potentially their home being attacked
again.
Exactly.
Like, again, this is the second home for them.
Exactly.
Right.
So,
this
and,
is the second,
and they have,
community.
They have a
lotion based home. Yeah.
But they have a lot of investment here, right? Like, I think they've become
the fish lady from the beginning of the episode. I'm telling you,
she's. I feel like they've become more of a part of the community.
Yeah.
They have become. They've almost found their own identities more. Whereas I think obviously in Kamino you're part of a big batch of clones, it's hard to have your own identity. Here they actually do. And I think that this is more personal, obviously, as a home. It's a safe place. So it'll definitely, if they end up hitting it, you know, Hemlock and his troopers, then it's going to be a big push to attack them. But I would sooner guess that the mystery trooper, the dark trooper that they have, that we don't know the mystery.
I mean, yeah.
Whoever it might be, is probably going to be the first person to show up there. Doing some reconnaissance, and who knows how that's going to play. Maybe that gets them to kidnap her again. I don't know. Then we find ourselves in a circle. So it's hard to predict how it's going to go. And I think that's what's actually kind of refreshing. Anything that I'm thinking of right now that could happen, it's like, well, they've already done that, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, what can they do differently this time? And also, how are we going to get to the answers that we need, like more confirmation of like identity on where Omega's come from and why she's so special outside of just having an M count? Because maybe Asajj is correct. Maybe it's not the idea that she's force sensitive. It's just that her blood has a high M count and she hasn't necessarily explored or has been able to wield that capability, but it's showing in other ways. Like we've talking about yeah. the emotional mm-hmm. level, right?
I almost feel like we might see that the reason why Omega's special is because, again, they're trying to make this perfect body almost for the Emperor to come back to. And we know the clones have like peak physicality. They are so easy, like able to become the top of the field as these hunters and bounty hunters and stuff like that, that they were based off of basically. And maybe they want that. And because Omega is unique in the fact that her blood is very receptive to the M count they want to put in there to give him the force sensitivity that he had in his previous body. Like, I feel like we're going to see that this Project Necromancer isn't so much as just bringing back the Emperor, because I'm sure they would have a DNA sample. It would be easy to just prick him with a needle and put it in storage until you need it type thing. Whereas this is to, make that ultimate body, essentially, and I think that's what we're going to find out hopefully by the end of the story.
See, I'm on the basis though that, like, and I think we've talked about this, so I don't want to necessarily get too in the weeds with it, but right now we are seeing the science side of Project Necromancer, and we're seeing mm-hmm. the side of cloning and that representation. I think Rey and obviously the lineage of where Rey comes from and as the father of a clone, her father is a clone of Palpatine. He is a product of that science. Mm-hmm. But I also think at the end of this, where we get to the Rise of Skywalker and we see that broken, disheveled, haunted, you know, Palpatine that's like...
Ghosty falling. Palpatine?
Yeah, and I think that is the magic. That is where the dark magic of the Dathomirians comes into play, because he's not at his full strength. But with the ability of the Force running through him, he's obviously going to be able to get that, and as we know, because he needs to absorb Rey and so on and so forth. But that said,
always
I think
needs
right
to absorb someone, you
he
know?
Needs to absorb something, right? Like it's the completion. The it's always the evil baddies, right? He's basically like Voldemort, right? So
he is Voldemort.
Yeah, exactly.
Megan, Voldy. What's going to happen, Batch? I've been waiting to hear what you think is going to happen.
I mean, I think it's really funny that they thought the perfect body was Snoke.
That was one possible option.
One
again.
Of the options.
I mean, they
it
had like
seems
four
like
of them
they didn't
the
really fully succeed with Necromancer. True, true. So that yeah. what we got was not a proper body.
Yeah.
So
no, I guess not. You're right. Yeah, I mean, again, like I said at the very beginning, the fact that a Clone Wars character was introduced in this episode. We did see her coming. She was in the trailer, but it was just about how she appeared.
Yeah.
It was dope. I feel like it's not the last time we're going to see her this season. I think that she'll come back. I think a bunch of characters we've been introduced to again or revisited in this show will come back before the end. Those being Hera, maybe Caleb, if he's still Caleb at this point.
Yeah.
That would be my most incredible dream come true if we get to witness Hera and Kanan meeting in this show. That would be so cool. But yeah, I think Ventress will come back. I don't know that it'll be as a mentor again, or if it will be a negative thing. I don't know. I think it'd be cool if Ventress was her mentor.
I just, but I just want to say that is a dope idea to bring Caleb back, because he was in the first episode.
Yeah.
And to be reunited with the Batches towards the end to help them through this, and then maybe by the process meet Hera. Like, that's pretty cool. I actually think that's, I'd like to see that happen, let alone if it is going to happen. But it makes sense, though, if someone like Caleb was there, because that was, that's where his trust kind of broke. But I guess then again, he doesn't trust troopers, and that goes a long way. So maybe, I don't know, maybe I've just talked to myself.
No,
maybe,
but
he trusts the Batch, though. They let him get away. Maybe it'd be him returning the favor to come in and help
second chance.
To like recognize Hunter. Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. I think it was interesting to see Omega's reaction to what Ventress was telling her. I think that, you know, I think more and more Omega is going to grow to understand that everyone around her is just not safe. Like, just everyone. And I think mm-hmm. this could push Omega to potentially, you know, do the thing that we never thought she'd ever want to do, which is to leave the Bad Batch. Like, I do think that we could have something similar to the Luke Grogu situation. I do hope that they would find a way, like you said, Justin, instead of going in circles, to do that differently. And I think the best way to do that differently is to kind of really make it Omega's decision that she struggles with. Or maybe she gets to a place where she's struggling with that concept, but then realizes she doesn't have to because she is more powerful with her Bad Batch brothers, right? Like, they could go either way with it. I do think, though, that they will continue to explore, obviously, those aspects further. And I do hope that we do see Ventress again. But I like the idea, Megan, that you're saying that everyone... everyone's coming back. We're gonna get, you know, Cody's gonna be back in some way.
It's gonna be a Rise of Skywalker all over again. And they're all gonna come in on Mantis, and they're like they're gonna just all fly in as like a big team and take out Tantus.
But I mean, even the fact that like Fennec Shand was brought back,
right.
Honestly, like the fact that there's characters that have been standalone, like, look, here's a character from another show or movie that you know, have been brought throughout this show. The fact that this is the last season, it would make sense for everybody to be reintroduced.
At least to have like them come back, because like
a moment.
Yeah, exactly. Like, even if like, you know, Hera did come back for an episode, right? Like, they reconnect. It's just a great callback to where we may have seen them in the previous seasons, right? And mm-hmm. how much has changed, and we know that they weren't apprehensive about introducing those characters or showing those characters before. So why not have a little fun with that now as we kind of get back? And it also just connects more of that
mm-hmm. there's always a reason for it,
for sure. And it has that, there's a connectivity to the idea of having these characters, the Batches, connect with characters that we know from other stories, and just how they've interacted. Like, you know, mm-hmm. we didn't know the events, or we never saw the events of what happened to Caleb, right? But now we did with the Bad Batch, and to know that they played a part in his sort of origin story, if you will, that's cool, right? So it would just be like the same thing if they found Grogu, right? Like, imagine the Batches found Grogu, and then that was like, you know, oh my god.
Bro, I was saying the Batches and Grogu cross paths last season. But anyways, let's get to our overall thoughts and score, which for this episode we're going to be rating on a final score of out of 5 unexpected. Jeez, have I been up in the sky with you, Darcy? What's going on here? We're going to be rating on a score of 5 unexpected mentors. And Brushstroke, why don't you kick us off?
Will do. Like I said, Clone Wars character brought into the show. Super happy about that. One of my favorite fight sequences I've seen in Star Wars since the Ahsoka versus Maul fight. Ventress also had so many dope quotes in this episode. Yeah. I just want to throw the last one. You said 2 of them already, Nate, but the last one, Hunter says something along the lines of, like, aren't you worried about the Empire and if they'll catch you? And she goes, they can try, but I've got a few lives left. I was like, that was the dopest thing she could have said in that
so
moment
sick.
Because
Very Cat
they
Woman.
Know that we all are like, why is she here? She's dead. Mm-hmm. She's like, no, I got a few lives left.
True.
So that fight sequences, seeing the Batches like unite again and fight mm-hmm. against Ventress was really dope. Learning, sort of, even though we already knew about the M counts, just kind of getting a lot of confirmation in this episode. I get why this was one we didn't get ahead of time. So it was super fun to connect with. Also, I'm going to ship Crosshair and Ventress from now on. I think they're hot together. So 5 out of 5 unexpected mentors for me.
Awesome. Yeah. Joints.
Yeah, I mean, this episode was great. Again, this whole season has been really strong in terms of story. Again, balancing that storytelling with Adventure of the Week. And while this one was very in and of itself, it still managed to really further the story along and develop these characters to take them places we didn't think we would see them. Again, the combination of Omega and Ventress is something we never thought we would see, and the way that they bring it to light here was so enjoyable. Again, great fight scene. The questions I have from this episode are only good ones. It's not like I'm questioning why they did something. I'm questioning how they're going to explain it, because I can't wait to get those little fillers that we know that Filoni and the team at Star Wars are so good at you know, exploring through other media. So again, 5 out of 5 Unexpected Mentors for this one, because it was such a great delight to see this character brought back in such a new way. Again, we got the teases of that at the end of her story in Dark Disciple, but to see it really fully realized here was awesome.
Alrighty. Eat it.
I think my other batch has said it best. I think this is a fantastic episode that really kind of, again, it served as being very meaningful to the larger story. It gave us answers to questions that I think we already knew, but it was just more of a confirmation. I think you said that best, Meg. And I think that, you know, to see a character that we hadn't seen for a very long time with a whole new perspective on life, but still catty and a little bit of a crazy, crazy one. It's really great to see it. And it's very unexpected to obviously pair her with Omega. I think in a lot of ways, I'm wondering what Ventress has taken away from her time with Omega, because I think she recognizes that there's something there. It's just not, you know, usable as a Jedi or in you know, in the more traditional way that she knows. But I think she's made a friend, and I think she's gonna look out for Omega, and I think that's apparent. And I think she's gonna reluctantly look out for her probably along the way. But yeah, I'm excited to see what would be next for Ventress and her journey, but I don't know what to anticipate next for the batches. And I think that's kind of where I'm like, you know, all right, I think I'm good with just kind of sitting back and letting this kind of unfold until we get to a point where it's like, oh, what are they hinting at here? Because I think right now they're really doing a great job with the storytelling, and it's been solid through and through. I think, like I said, the last episode was a little more filler. I probably wouldn't be giving it the 5 out of 5 that I'm giving this episode, because I think again, it was refreshing to see Asajj come in and just be entirely different while also being the same. It's very good.
Yeah, I for the most part, I think I agree with all of you wonderful batches. I think this episode was great. I mentioned last week that I would have rather spent more time with Omega and Crosshair on Pabu. And, you know, while we subbed out Crosshair for Ventress and Ventress teaching Omega instead of Omega teaching Crosshair, although she does kind of teach Crosshair a lesson in this as well, we just got more of what I wanted. And this exploration of Omega and her character and what she's possibly capable of, seeing Ventress kick all 3 asses of our Bad Batch bros was awesome. And like you said, getting to see them kind of come back again, there's this amazing tracking shot of the 3 of them, like, that goes across their rifles. It's just so good in this. We really get to see Omega witnessing both sides of what a Force-attuned individual is capable of. And the visual storytelling and the way that they set the tone, the Kiner's music was great. The bamboo flute rendition of Omega's theme while she's doing the Karate Kid balancing on the on the rock, and bringing in the Bad Batch theme when they kind of, you know, kind of, as we said, get their guns back. So much of it worked for me. I think the only thing that happens that happened in this episode, and it happens a lot with Bad Batch episodes, is like the ending did feel a little bit too rushed just for me, just in the sense that, like, I would have liked a little bit longer of a conversation or Omega's reaction to what Ventress's lie was. Obviously, we'll get that in future episodes as they continue to explore the character and what this episode meant for them. But yeah, overall, very solid episode. I'm giving it a 4.5 out of 5. Unexpected Mentors. So that is it for this week's Watch Club for Star Wars The Bad Batch Season 3. We hope you enjoyed it, and if you did, well, make sure to subscribe to us wherever you like to listen to podcasts, if you haven't already. And if you want to write into the show with your thoughts or predictions on the shows we cover in Watch Club, well, you don't have to trust a random stranger to do some weird tests on you while she beats up your space dad / brothers and then meditates with a giant squid. Instead, Justin, can you let the big, beautiful batches know where they can reach us? By holo message.
Well, they can reach us at wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. That's wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. Or they can reach out to us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @geekcentricyt, or on Instagram @wearegeekcentric.
keep in mind, we've also got our Discord that you can join us. We've got a link in our description. Join us. Come on over. Talk. Tell us about your thoughts and theories. Let us know when you think we're going to see Ventress again. And are we going to see the introduction of Caleb Doom? Is it Doom? I think it's Doom. To Caleb Doom to Hera Syndulla. I think it would be just beautiful. You know, Megan's just been, she's literally written, she wrote the script, she sent it to
yeah,
the wonderful
people
input.
There.
Yeah, to Brad and Jen, and just said, hey, listen.
Yeah.
We also have a ton of other great episodes covering the latest in movies, TV shows, including our recent spoiler-filled discussion on Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, as well as our spoiler-free reviews for Three Body Problem, X-Men 97, Invincible Season 2 Part 2, Kung Fu Panda 4, Extraordinary Season 2, and Dune Part 2. Plus, we have a special This Week in Geek episode where we discuss the latest and greatest trailers, because like a lot of trailers came out in like a matter of like a couple days for some reason.
And more came out after.
And more came out after, yeah. And they're just, yeah. they I guess maybe there was like something that might have put them on pause, I don't know. So they are flooding out now, and of course we had to talk about them to get hyped for what's to come this year. So check out that special episode. Plus, we have some great interviews out now, like our most recent interviews with George Buza, who plays Beast, Lenore Zahn, who plays Rogue, and Jake Castorana, the supervising producer and supervising director, all from X-Men 97. Justin sat down with them to discuss the return and revival of the classic Saturday morning cartoon. And we have some interviews coming up for another Disney Plus series with the cast of Renegade Nell, which debuts on Disney Plus March 29th, which is, I guess, today as of you listening to this. So go check out those interviews both here on your podcast service of choice or over on YouTube at youtube.com/geekcentric. Subscribe, leave a review. It helps us so much. And we'll have even more Watch Club coming soon, with episode 10 dropping shortly after episode 10 of the show drops on Disney Plus next week. And we will be dropping in like the dopest, dankest dude on Dagobah to talk all about it. Megan, Darcy, Justin, thank you so much for joining me for this Watch Club. And as we say,
good soldiers follow orders.